Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your processes to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart. Schedule package pickups and see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers. With rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up with code PROGRAM for a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's stamps.com. Code program.
Experience the unconventional.
Evening, boss.
The unpredictable.
What's happening?
And the completely unorthodox.
Exactly.
With rule-free Ian Lee. The late night alternative with Ian Lee.
I've got no internet for the last 4 days.
On Talk Radio.
You're 45.
I am not. I'm 41. Petty.
Okay, all right, calm down. Very excited.
And street.
All right, now you're showing off just because you've made a new buddy who you think you're going to get free tickets from at some point. Well, trust me, I know how these showbiz types work. There ain't no free tickets coming out of this guy. There's nothing coming out of this guy.
Let's see.
I'm going to introduce you, Noel, in a way you've never been introduced before.
Oh, excellent.
I'm going to say star of musicals, a teacher, a world traveller, a singer, performer, it's Noel Sullivan.
Thank you very much.
And he's got the most beautiful tan you've ever seen.
God, he's dark, isn't he?
I look like
what kind of state are you, man?
I look like I've Ron sealed myself, don't I?
Well,
I remember the young, pale lad. He walks in and he looks Asian. I don't know if that's racist to say that someone looks Asian.
I do have a little bit of Asian blood. In
oh,
me,
do you?
So it's, you know, the sunshine brings her out.
Whereabouts is the Asian? What part of your family and where from?
Well, I don't really know because I'm not in touch with that side of the family.
Oh, right.
Much.
Oh.
But, I know it's in India somewhere.
Controversy in the first 2 minutes.
Oh, yeah.
This is going to be great. He doesn't speak to half of his family.
Yeah, high five for that one.
Yes,
well
man.
Done, mate.
I don't speak to loads of my family as well. And part of me, sometimes I feel sad about it.
Yeah.
Part of me just thinks, yes. Makes it easier.
Yeah,
makes
definitely.
It easier.
Especially at Christmas time, you know.
You don't have to like each other. That's the rule.
Oh, right.
No one tells you until you're a grown up. You don't have to like each other. It's okay to admit you don't like each other.
Now, listen, I'm saying that's probably the first time you've been introduced like that because I bet every time it's Noel from Hearsay.
Yes.
That must be the thing. And that was you were saying 2001.
Yeah.
And that was, we will talk about all the stuff you're doing now as well. We're going to get
Fine.
All the plugs in.
Great.
We're going to sell out your show that you're doing in Cardiff on April the 19th.
What?
Yeah,
not even
written down.
What?
Oh, mate.
When I walked into your office just now, I was like, they have no idea what's going on. They got their shoes off. They're eating takeaways.
You were brought up by the security man who was trying to tap you up for a job because everyone's got the sack. You're tapping him up for a job?
He was. Not in the way I like, though. So, but so he's not getting the job.
You're right. So we're going to plug everything, man. And you're right for an hour. Can we have you for an hour? Beautiful. Right. So, but let's do the business. Let's do the business end of it. You, of course, were in Hearsay.
Yes.
And that was 2001. And what the series was? Pop Stars.
It was.
Pop Idols was the one after.
Yeah.
Pop Stars was that the first one of this kind of modern?
Yeah. It was the first time. So it wasn't like
pick
you know,
me, Nigel.
Yeah,
that was the tagline, wasn't it?
Pick me, Nigel, and there was like, and it was sponsored by a really hideous like fizzy drink as well that lasted as long as Hearsay, I think.
Really? What was the drink?
Yeah, I can't remember. Something awful though. Every flavour was just like hideous. Anyway, that, I don't know why that's popped into my head.
The mouth that feeds him. That reunion's never going
to
happen.
He never needs to drink that crap again.
Thank God.
It was. I mean, we'd always had talent show and all this kind of Simon Cowell stuff. All it is opportunity knocks with bells and whistles.
Exactly.
It's all the same thing.
Yeah.
But this was. I'm wearing a David Jones T-shirt. I'm a big fan of the Monkees. Right. Yes. I love.
Well, they were the first version, weren't they?
They were the first, yeah. Exactly. I love those manufactured pop bands, yeah. And most pop bands are. And there's no shame in it. I think it's a very credible way to make a musical outfit. But this was the first time, I think, that we as the British public had seen... There was the competition side of it, and that was that kind of one thing, the auditions and people coming through and all that. But this is the first time we'd seen the machinery in place.
Yeah, well, the idea of Pop Stars was not like a competition as we know the X Factor now.
Yes.
It was a fly-on-the-wall documentary about how to make a band. So there were no phone... people say to me all the time, I voted for you. And I think, no, you never.
Oh, were there no votes?
No, there was no votes.
Right.
It was just for... Yeah, we got picked by... industry professional.
It was Nicky Chapman,
Paul Adam and Nigel Lithgow.
Paul who?
Exactly, that's
Paul
show
Adam's
business.
Paul Adam's brother is Ray that rings up this show.
Is it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Paul
really?
Adam, like, he was a big boss at Polydor. Now he works for Spotify.
Yeah, okay. Ray still boasts about him.
Okay, there you go. Right. I should pay more attention to our callers. All right, fine, yeah.
they picked us out of, this is the first time they had regional auditions as well. So for me in Cardiff, there was, I think the only other audition I'd ever seen in the local paper was Barrymore's My Kind of People.
Right.
So that tells you how sparse life was in those days.
No, but I get that. Growing up, I grew up partly in Manchester and nothing ever happened to us. It was always, you watched the TV and it was always London kids that seemed to get everything, right?
Yeah.
So for it to be in your backyard was a massive deal.
You sound just like Suzanne now, who I think is listening. But she was the same. Like she came from a bit of more of a showbiz background. She'd done The Biz.
I remember The Biz. I love that.
Exactly, The Biz.
Yeah, so, but yeah, same thing. Like they just... Really,
so you say it's been a while.
It's been a while. It has been a while. Don't let him in a radio studio. So it was it's the first time that we had access to regional auditions and everybody piled in. So then they who did we have? Yeah, Nigel and that. They whittled us down. We had the regional auditions in Cardiff, and then we went to Birmingham.
When you did the thing in Cardiff, did you really... What were you, 19?
19.
Right, okay, so kid.
Yeah.
You know, not to patronise, a kid.
Yeah, yeah.
Did you think, I've done well in this, I'm going to go through... Or were you just kind of...
Yeah,
what were you doing as an 18, 19-year-old lad?
So I just come back from my second... So I'd done a summer season in Ibiza. And
doing what? Partying? Pills? What was this?
Yeah, all of that. But it was working for... I've worked for an entertainment agency out there. So we put on shows in the hotels for guests.
Did you have to wear the big mascot outfits?
No. So the first... It was really random. The first year I did a Blacklight Theatre of Prague show where you dress all in black on a black stage under ultraviolet lights. And you do like... So there's like a soundtrack that plays.
That,
and then you put like...
White gloves or...
Yeah, all the things, but all of the puppets are painted with UV paint.
Yeah, I know the thing.
Yeah. So basically, like, you take the whole set there, you set it up, and then you put on a show in the hotel, and then, like, it lasts for, like, an hour and a half, and then you're done. That's, like, the best job I ever had, because obviously you're done by 9 o'clock.
Yeah.
No one knows your face, because you've got, like, a black scarf on your head.
Drunk, burnt people will clap whatever, won't
exactly,
they?
Exactly, they don't care.
They don't care.
They're in an all-inclusive looking at magic. They're like, this is the best show they've ever seen in their life. So I did that for the first summer season, and then I went back for the second summer season, and I lasted for about 4 weeks, and I was singing a lot more and all that kind of stuff, and I was just like, what am I doing? Like, I'd finished my A-levels, and I was like, one season was enough. If I stay here, you looked at that time at the older entertainers, and they were like, they'd been there their whole lives. They ran a bar, they did their circuit, and it was just dreary. Like, it's a lovely island, don't get me wrong, but I wanted more.
Yeah.
So I came home, and literally the day I got off the plane, my mum was like, have you seen this? And it was a cutting out of the paper. So, so the plan was either to go to college to do musical theatre. That was a plan for that September. And I kind of applied to places and stuff and had quite good feedback. And then this happened. And I didn't question it. I was just like, There was nothing to compare it to. Nothing had been done like it before. So yeah. I wasn't like, oh my God, I'm going to be a pop star and it's going to be massive on telly. You didn't know because no one knew.
Yeah.
So I just went through the audition process and was like, oh, this is good. I'm getting there. So they took us to Birmingham, whittled us down again. Then we did all that Green Mile stuff in London at the Brixton Studios where they took the final 30 and we all worked together and every day people got cold and we had to walk.
Now, it was Darius.
Yeah.
That was your series, was it?
Right. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Wow.
Yeah, wow.
I mean, he's evil, right? We can
no,
say that.
No, he's not. He had a massive kind of resurgence, didn't he? A haircut and seemed to sort of calm down a little bit.
He came back with the Noel skills, basically. Yes. He went away. He got his hair done like mine. He looked down the camera and said, I am like, he stole my groove.
And he kept his riffs a little bit tighter.
Yeah, exactly.
He went away.
He watched what I did and he sorted himself out.
18 years after it happened, I know you say Darius Britney Spears. But we can picture that, and that's how iconic. And that's just one scene, but that's how huge pop stars the whole series was. It was getting like 10, 12, 15 million viewers. Yeah. It was insane.
Yeah, and you forget it's like before social media. It's before like massive Sky TV. You know, it's when we just had everybody was watching TV
it was
on a Saturday night.
Yeah,
was it before camera phones.
Yes. Because I can thinking of that about the I had Nokia with a snake on, and that was like the coolest, most up to date phone ever. You know, playing Snake.
Just thinking, the way that you were kind of pushed into it, and you know, you're 19, you're a kid, you're just going from one audition to the next, not quite thinking about what might be about to be unleashed on you.
Yeah.
Thank God there were no camera phones. Thank God there was no Twitter. Because what happened to you?
It's different because now, like, it's just different, isn't it? Now, if you went through the X Factor process or whatever, There's more support. There's more like there's less of that kind of hell that you would have online. But then we also had the press to deal with, which was a different beast back then. Mm-hmm. So all of the story, you know, I'd spent two summer seasons in Ibiza. I got up to mischief like anyone my age would have done at that time. And then it's selling stories. And I, in some ways that feels at that time, it feels like. I feel like news is way more disposable now. You see something and then it's replaced by something instantly. Mm-hmm. Whereas like the big deal was what's being printed in the papers on a Saturday and it affected things more, I think.
So how much... I can't quite remember. How much... It was kind of almost happening live, wasn't it?
Yeah,
the episodes were being filmed and they'd go out that week?
So basically when we got down to the final five and they moved us into a secret house in Mill Hill and we were probably about... We moved in about 6 months ahead of the air date.
Right.
So it was catching up in real time. Yeah. So like the last maybe three or four episodes were as they were editing that week.
Wow.
So it was what was weird is that period of time when you're just recording stuff and you know just stuck in this house just thinking is anyone even going to watch this?
Yeah. Right.
And then obviously
it could have been a flop. You're right.
Yeah, of course.
Also, it was brutal. And again, another iconic moment that stands out that would never say. Hopefully, well they might.
I know where you're going with
film.
This. Kim.
Kim Marsh. Nigel Lithgow telling Kim Marsh he was. Too fat and needed to lose.
But her reaction was perfect.
She was incredible.
Yeah.
Needed to lose some weight. But it just shows how this was the first time that the mm-hmm. fact that, yeah, okay, you guys are going to get shit on because that's, we know what happens in pop. Yeah. But the fact that even the people in charge were saying stuff that looked terrible on TV.
But also, there was no pretense, right, of anything other than if you don't like it, you can jog on. There's someone else behind you that will come in. Whereas with the X Factor, they built up from the start to think that they're the next big thing.
Yeah, of course. But even like the deal, I remember going to sit in the lawyers when we were signing the deal and it was the last 10 of us. So they hadn't picked, you know, they hadn't yet gone round to our houses to tell us we're in and all that stuff. And the deal was shocking. And, you know, you're there going, I'm signing my life away here and I'm not going to get anything for this. But the solicitor, the lawyer was just like, listen, if you don't sign this, you're totally replaceable. They've got people waiting in the wings. And you're like, well, you know,
to
it's
kids.
Better than...
Presenting them with that.
Yeah, I know. You don't. At the time, you're like, oh my God, I'm just going to do it. And now looking back on it, I was like, everybody was just taking the mic.
Or I imagine in the back of your head, you go, do you know what? I'll make it work. I'll make it work somehow. Just get my foot in the door.
But also, even just like they paid us £500 a week to be on the TV show at that time. And I was just like, that was more money than I'd ever seen at that time in my life. I was working as a waiter, you know, like I was supporting myself through my A-levels. I'd had a job as long as I could work from where I was from, you know, a single parent family and just like trying to, you know.
Yeah. So we should say, because there will be some people, we've got kids listening. Hearsay was the band. At the time, the fastest selling debut single, is that right?
Yeah.
Like 500,000 copies in a week.
In a week. Yeah.
Or something
hard
insane.
Copies, yeah.
You probably hate Hearsay because of the misplaced apostrophe. Catherine is very punctuation police.
Sure.
That apostrophe in between the here and the say, that must just drive you nuts.
I didn't hate Hearsay. I could forgive them anything.
And here's the thing. I mean,
anything.
It was great. It was a great TV show. It was a great song. You guys were a great band. You were a perfect...
It was just, it just did what it was supposed to do.
Also, you were all dead approachable. There wasn't a Darius in there, because Darius was pretty much set up as the villain, wasn't he? And a bit of a knob. And thankfully, you managed to turn it around afterwards. But, you know, they definitely pitted you against each other. And it was all the normal nice kids, and then him doing his Britney Spears extended remix. But they're all incredibly likable, approachable. You know, the stuff with Kim... Everyone sided with her actually against Nigel, and he was setting himself up as Mr. Nasty, wasn't it?
Yeah, but that was his. But obviously, he comes from like Boss of Light Entertainment. Yeah. He wants to make TV. You know, it's the first time when you're like, okay, we need TV stories as well, because not just making the music, it's like making sure people tune in after the break so we can sell the crap pop.
And let's have some, let's have some conflict, and if there isn't any, we'll make some.
You mentioned the money. You don't have to go into specifics, but did you make any money out of it?
The only place that we made any money really was the live tours, the arena.
You play
tour.
In big arenas,
yeah. So that was great for us, like merchandise and all that stuff.
Okay, so you made money off the back of that,
yes, yeah.
But the TV show, the records, nothing.
I did just have a PRS check that's taken 15 years to come through.
Go on, how much?
At $3,000. 15 years, though.
No, that's terrible.
Come on.
It's terrible.
15 years. 15 years. I was like, oh, my old manager's getting back in touch. I'm thinking, here we go.
Finally.
I mean, it's not to be sniffed at, don't get me wrong, but if you look at what we sold.
Yo, God.
Come on. Anyway.
The arena tour, that was...
Not bitter, better.
There we go.
Yes, exactly.
The arena tour, that was big, though. It's going to be...
It's
going to be a handful of dates, and it went nuts.
Yeah.
The country loved you. That was the thing. For a while.
For a short time.
Here comes Alan Caddick. For a short time, the country loved you and everybody was on your side.
Yeah.
That must have... I take that back. Was that good feeling? It was really scary. Scary.
Yeah, of course. Because it's like you're locked in a house and then you step out the next day when they announced who we are and Trevor McDonald is on the news. And he's telling everybody, you know, are these people? And you're like, what? It literally changed your life overnight. And you're not seeing your family. You're not like, there was no connection. So you're just getting, you're just surrounded by, people, you know, people who you don't even know. They're just there to make the money off you. It's looking back on it, it was a crazy time. I don't want to sound like I'm being down on it, because
it was an amazing experience.
Yeah, it was an amazing experience. And the performance side of things for me will never be topped, you know, like abseiling down from Wembley roof, you know, looking like we've jumped out of a helicopter that we've shot because we've got, you know, like it was amazing. The tour was amazing, and I got to share it. You know, I made Susie, is one of my best friends still. I'm godfather to her beautiful boys.
Are you really?
Yeah.
Oh, isn't that lovely?
Yeah, and she was best man at my wedding.
wicked.
She organised my stag do. Like she, you know, like,
oh, that's lovely.
So even just for that, now I look back on that as one of the most like what an amazing thing to get out of that, you know, that friendship.
We need to take a quick break. Alan, you're very welcome to come on 0344 499 1000. We got singer, entertainer, performer Noel Sullivan in the studio. This is Talk Radio.
The wild man of late night radio.
The late night alternative with Ian Lee on Talk Radio.
We have ways of making you talk.
Idea of that. You wait. Oh, there we go. Sorry. We weren't listening. We weren't listening, and we nearly got busted.
Catherine
shut up, but she shut up, but she didn't say, "Lads, no, I'm gonna stop talking about that."
I thought you were going to get to the good stuff.
She was enjoying that. She was like,
"She's
yes.
old school BBC entrapment."
Entrapment. See it. Now I know. Now.
We're kind of jumping. We've got Noel Sullivan in. Some of you will remember him from Hearsay. Give Alan a call back. We'll get Alan. I'm sure Noel would love to talk to him. We mentioned Alan before the show. Okay, so How long was the bubble?
The bubble from start to finish.
It was a short one, wasn't it?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Like publicly about a year and a half.
Was that all it was?
Yeah, yeah. For us it was about 2.5. Yeah, two years. 18. I don't know.
Well, no,
I'm saying it with such conviction. No, yes, I think it was. No, I haven't got a clue.
You felt like a proper pop band, you know, yeah. Within a couple of months.
Well, the thing is, we were so saturated, weren't we? So,
I guess.
Like, if you imagine every media form.
Yeah.
Just talking about us all the time, there is nowhere for that to go. There was never any take, you know, if you win X Factor now, they take you away for a year and sort you out properly. Any like stylists or music choices, or it was all happening in front of everyone, you know.
Which is perhaps why Liberty X, who were formed from the people that didn't make ESA, perhaps had a slightly longer pop career because they weren't being thrust everywhere by ITV and
the machine. Exactly, exactly. Yeah, well, they went away and they got Virgin got hold of them and made them into that band, but then equally they just did a load of covers. So were they in a better position than us in the long term? I don't know.
Yeah, I guess for the people that came after you, it's a bit like being the younger siblings, right? They can see what happened to you. Little lessons are being learned all the time.
Of course, yeah.
So each time it gets slightly better for them, I'm guessing.
Yeah, well, you think that Pop Stars The Rivals, which was the next version of Pop Stars, which came after Pop Idol, was Girls Aloud and One True Voice.
Right.
And the poor boys, they were the first, like, proper thrown into the abyss, I think.
Yeah. Oh, they were sacrificed, totally.
Yeah.
First time you're on Top of the Pops. What was that like? Was that a thing? Was that a thing for you?
Yeah, of course, of course. It's still a thing for me.
Yeah.
I still show off about that.
As you should.
Yeah, of course. Top of the Pops. We were on there all the time.
I was watching a load today.
Yeah,
I was
it's so... And you look. I look back at those videos, I'm like, look at us. Like, we're such babies, you know. Top of the Pops, Ant and Dec.
Was
SMTV?
It SMTV?
SMTV Live, Chums, all of that. When you got a script and you were in Chums, you were just like...
Here's the thing about SMTV. By that time, I was in my 20s. When 20-somethings were watching it, wasn't a kids' programme,
Because it was proper hangover TV, wasn't it?
Exactly.
Yeah, I loved it. You could watch all the pop acts on CD UK and all that stuff.
Perfect.
Yeah, it was just great. We literally lived in that building.
What was interesting, and I sensed the change, but I didn't know it was quite so toxic until I was reading up on it today, is when Kim Marsh left... What's interesting about Hearsay is it follows pretty much step for step the pop band story, but compressed. Compressed.
Yeah.
Normal pop band story, maybe 4 or 5 years.
Yeah, yeah.
Yours, it was that, and everything happened so quickly. So Kim leaves for whatever reason, and you could have either gone on as a four piece, but you decided to get someone else. And there was that. I remember that show where you were auditioning.
Horrible.
But it was
horrible.
It was like a market version of Pop Stars, wasn't it? It was like a cheaper. It was on ITV2.
It was
a cheaper version of it, wasn't it?
Yeah.
I remember thinking, okay, this is going to be an interesting storm.
And you know that you don't want to do it. You've said you don't want to do it, but they're all forced into it. Yeah, they're cracking
on. Did you
on
have it. Any say
no.
in your career
no.
at that point?
No.
They came in and said, right, you got this.
No, I remember even saying, like, they wanted to go with the single off the second record to everybody, and I hated it. I was like, this is so dry. It sounded like a song by Five.
It sounded like Five.
It sounded like that, but also, like, so the Mel C, Bryan Adams duet.
Oh,
it's like the same chord structure as that as well. And I was just like, this is dry. Come on. Like, we could do something better than this. And there were some really good tracks on that second album, I thought. But they didn't see the light of day in the end. So, it didn't matter. Our opinions didn't matter.
No. And that was set out from the start, wasn't it? It was, if you don't like it, you can jog on.
And that's not what we were there for. We weren't there to be, like, creative artists.
No.
But then, having had that experience when you're 20, when comes the point when you're allowed to call yourself an artist? Like, it's taken me up until last year to realise that I was. That because I didn't feel like I could own that because I was from a pop band and I was being told all the time that you're not worth anything because you were in a pop
band.
That's
crazy.
Yeah. You know?
That's crazy. Because your career since then is something you've built brick by brick. You own it and you deserve to be proud of it.
Yeah. It's been looking back on it now when I read my own, you know, when I have to hand in my CV for stuff and I'm just like... Yeah, I have put in the hours now, and it is something that can't be like taken away from me.
Let's get there a mix. I just want to get on. This is kind of getting to the end of the Hearsay thing because when the fifth member, it was Johnny, somebody who'd been a dancer in the band, and suddenly that was the moment the public turned. The media turned and then inevitably the public turned because people started screaming, fix.
Yeah.
This is a fix. It's one of their mates. And I remember watching and thinking, I'd say I like pop bands. I like pop bands. I like watching them. it suddenly got really, really nasty from the outside.
Yes.
With people, nation's favourites, suddenly now you're cheats and you're liars and you're scam artists.
Yeah.
Did you feel that
from where you guys were? Yeah, we had like proper Daphne and Celeste moments where we'd be singing at Radio Row shows and they'd be chucking cash, you know, like pennies and stuff at you. And you'd be like dodging them or like...
Really?
Yeah. And
so
like,
hang on, this decision that'd been made probably, I'm imagining, completely over your head as everything else was.
Yeah.
Was suddenly
put
on your door.
But then the press sentiment had switched as well.
Right.
It was all
That's about
they started like digging up on stories about our families and about our pasts and about, you know, and you're just thinking everyone's kids at that point, all they've done is ridiculous teenage stuff that is going to sound really terrible.
Yeah.
But also, that's all we've done in our lives. So that's the biggest moments in your whole lives are being exposed every Sunday.
Oh, teenagers shagging and taking drugs.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Mind blown.
But you think it's fine now. I'm like a man and I can look back on it and go, yeah, everybody's doing that. It doesn't matter. But when it's your own personal secrets for the first time and you're thinking, I don't want my nan to read that.
Yeah.
I don't want my mum to meet.
Shame.
I didn't get into this for that side of things. I don't court publicity. I'm not out there on red carpets. I'm not doing any of that stuff. I'm like just getting on with my job. So how did that work?
How did it end? Did the four of you, did you go, we're done?
Yes.
Did the contract end?
No. It was basically we went out to America to record some stuff and things got all a bit like, just all a bit, it was all fractured anyway, and it all kind of came to a bit of a head whilst we were out in the States. And then when we got back to London, we had a meeting and we're just like, the only thing we can do now, like, is it worth just dragging ourselves through this for the sake of pop music and feeling this pain? Or do we just club together and say we're not having it anymore? And we didn't tell our manager. We just phoned the Sun and said we're quitting.
So do you know what? Ironically, that thing they've been saying to you all along, if you don't like it, you can stop.
Yeah. And we
did. As a threat, you went, do you know what? We'll take you up on that because this isn't worth it.
Yeah, and you know, and that's the only thing for me that I'll say is the best part is that the end was our decision.
You took control.
Yeah. And it was the best thing we ever did.
Who phoned the Sun? Was it one of you or did you have it on speakerphone?
I can't remember.
Bold, you know, grabbing back the power.
Yeah, I think it's all a bit of a first
of course
that
it
time.
Is.
Do you know what
of course
I mean?
It is.
Because it's still quite a... Yeah, it's not something that...
And
it is at that period I haven't, like, revisited very much.
And are you cool talking about it?
Is it not too painful
or anything?
No, I've just had...
I know you've been through a lot recently. We are going to get onto the hugely successful career. You haven't stopped working in the last 10, 12, 13 years. But we were talking during the break, that period after any pop band goes, you're dirt, you know.
Yeah.
No one wants a former pop star for a year.
And as much as the public like a success story, they do
in
love,
this country, they love
kids that have been blown up. Look at them, they thought they were it.
And you know, I went back to Cardiff and like my hometown is not an easy place. Like I love it dearly. It's made me who I am. I love Wales. But to go back it's a vicious place on a weekend anyway, I got into so many like scuffles and that's totally not me either. Like, you know, people look for it from you. People want you to be up your ass. Do you know what I mean? They want you to, so they can say,
well, it's that idiot
I saw him and he was a... Yeah, exactly. So, I had loads of that.
The number of encounters... I've heard people say to me, I met such and such and they were an idiot. Where'd you meet them? Oh, it was in a queue at a thing. Right, so you spent 2 minutes with them and you've based that 2 minutes when who knows what was happened before. Who knows what's going on. Like that 2 minutes where they might have been a bit short or didn't want a picture or whatever, you've got from that they're an idiot and they're a dick.
Here's something else I've noticed. People who are not used to seeing people that they see on the telly have one of two... Well, all right, maybe three reactions. One, not saying anything at all. Two, being really nice to you. Three, they desperately want your attention somehow, so they just pick on you for some, you know, for whatever reason.
Yeah.
You know, aggression.
Yeah. I didn't... That part of it for me, like, that probably scared me into pursuit, you know, like, for the next part of my career, I didn't know what to do because I was scared of trying to pursue that because it felt like such a scary thing at that time. And then social life goes out the window because you don't want to leave the house and everything else tumbles
down.
Did
you think about jacking it all in? I don't mean killing yourself. I mean, maybe you
did
as well. Maybe you did as well. But the career, did you think, do you know what? Well, that's done. I'm going to go and get a nice office job now. And
No, because I only knew music.
Yeah.
Like, it was my passion. I'd been singing since I was six. It was my only is the only way I knew joy, really, you know. And actually, it was getting... I decided to represent myself for a little while afterwards because I didn't trust anyone.
No, and also, you just got the power back. You don't want to give it to
someone
else.
Exactly, exactly. So my first job was I went out to play Danny Zuko in Greece at the Jersey Opera House for a summer season.
Wow.
And I worked... My Sandy was Claire Buckfield, who is... She used to go out with Deck.
Yes, I remember her. Remember?
She was in 2.4 Children.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, yeah, of course.
Her and Julie, and they were in Grange Hill. Yeah. And all that stuff. But Claire was in the show with me. And I just... She was great because she'd had so much experience. And I remember going there really scared. And then feeling the warmth of a theatre cast for the first time. They are just... They're misfits and they're bonkers and they've all had the weird kids at school who nobody wanted to hang around with because they were dancing and singing all the time. But actually, before it was cool to do that, becoming a pop star was a thing, you know, when I grew up, it wasn't cool to do that. It was, you know...
Especially for a boy.
Exactly. And so you meet all these people and then suddenly you're like, oh my God, I'm in a... That's my family. That's my fam. Yeah. You know?
These are me. These people
exactly.
get it.
Exactly. And you can say anything in the theatre. Anything, I swear to God, anything, and no one bats an eyelid. No one ever goes, that's weird.
Yeah.
And you just, and that's where I found my home. So it didn't matter how much confidence had been knocked bit by bit. And that's why I stayed in it for so long, because I just felt that's where I feel like I belong.
But
there.
Also as well, to do, and you've done loads of musicals. We'll go through them. You've done loads and big roles in musicals as well, which... You've got to be good and you've got to be able to work hard to sustain any career doing that kind of stuff. People go, look at pop groups and go, well, it's just a bunch of idiots just dancing and singing. Anyone can do that. Well, actually, no, not everyone can do it. The fact that you've carried on working shows that you have got the talent and the dedication to make a career.
Yeah, there were a couple of... They're obviously in theatre. And I get asked this quite a lot because I do think there's a place for people to be in shows if they have... If they haven't got the talent sometimes, because I think if a celebrity draws people to the theatre who wouldn't usually go there...
Yeah.
And they're going to see them.
Exactly. I think there's power in that. And I think, I hate it within my industry, the people who are like, well, they shouldn't get the jobs. We've trained for all these years. Yeah, but they have. But they've got the profile. They bring the bums on seats to make sure
everyone
gets paid.
Everyone else gets a job,
yeah. Yeah, exactly. So that's the one thing. But secondly, there have been a couple of roles in my career that changed things, because then they suddenly went... So I was the first. I was the first British person to be cast as Galileo.
I nearly said English.
I nearly did.
Don't betray your people.
My family. I know I'm going home on Friday. They'll set me on fire. so basically, I was the first British guy to be cast as Galileo in We Will Rock You in 10 years.
Wow.
So they'd had like covers who were British and stuff, but I was also the first person who had ever had like come from a pop background to play that role. I did it for 18 months on tour, and then Brian May said, will you come and play it at the 10th anniversary at the Dominion?
Oh, come on, mate. That'd do, wouldn't it?
You know, so when let you're me just think like, about it, Brian.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
So it's
that moment where I'm just like, then for me, and that was only in 2012, but at that moment I was like, I'm here now.
Yeah.
I've arrived.
It's validation from someone who knows their stuff.
Yeah. Exactly.
And also, no one's doing any favours. You are there because you deserve to be there.
And
I've
auditioned 10 times for that role, you know. I've beaten off all the competition.
Right, we're going to have a quick break.
Let's leave it there.
Exactly. Exactly. We're going to have a quick break. When we come back, we're going to introduce you to Mr. Alan Caddick, who's a regular caller to the show.
Lovely.
And maybe you, dear listener. We got Noel for another 20 minutes or so. 0344 499 1000. This is Talk Radio.
Across the UK, online and on DAB.
We are Talk.
Talk Radio. Give it some lip.
If there's one thing that my family and friends know me for, it's being an amazing gift giver. I owe it all to Celebrations Passport from 1-800-Flowers.com, my one-stop shopping site that has amazing gifts for every occasion. With Celebrations Passport, I get free shipping on thousands of amazing gifts. And the more gifts I give, the more perks and rewards I earn. To learn more and take your gift giving to the next level, visit 1-800-Flowers.com/ACAST. That's 1-800-Flowers.com/ACAST.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
The voice of reason is on Talk Radio.
Hello, I'm James Whale.
Get in the ring with the legendary James Whale.
When I say hang on, will you shut up?
The radio presenter who isn't afraid to tell you what to think.
Quite frankly, this is the most ridiculously stupid idea I've ever heard.
Hard-boiled conversation from the man with the pinball smile and the cue ball head.
This man needs to be called to account. So where is he? Could we get his home number and ring him?
Hail the Whale.
I'm being over rude, I know.
The James Whale Show.
Tomorrow night from 7 on Talk Radio.
After hours amusement for anarchists, air hostesses and jet-lagged antipodeans.
Good night, Cobbers. Can I crash on your floor?
The Late Night Alternative with Ian Lee on Talk Radio.
I'm loving this. Noel Sullivan is here and, ladies and gentlemen, so is Mr. Alan Caddick.
Hello.
Hi, Alan.
I remember seeing you at the NSC Arena in September 2001.
Wow.
You remember him, right?
Yeah.
And how much did you pay for a ticket, Alan?
It was a college trip.
Oh, OK. So, I've got to check. Are you calling for a refund? Were you disappointed with the performance?
No. I was a big hearsay fan.
Yes. Well, this would be good, because I haven't got the cash to give it back to you anyway.
You got £3,000 the other day, young man. We know exactly how... We know literally how much money you have got. That's... Do you want to chastise him for murdering Monday by the Mamas and the Papas? Is that what you're calling in for, Alan?
No, I'm asking a serious question.
Oh, you've got a question. Okay.
Serious question time.
All right.
Have you ever thought about going into soaps like Kim in and Koi or Suzanne in Emmerdale?
Have you ever gone into soaps? Because that's how TV works. You think about it.
Yeah, and then it happens.
You just have to ring them up and say, I'm ready now.
Yeah. I have auditioned for a couple of soaps, actually, and I've never got them. So.
Publicum?
No, I can't speak Welsh.
You racist.
I can't. What did you call me? I don't think you got your pronunciation quite right there. I have auditioned for some. I haven't got them. There you go.
Well, Alan, do you know any producers of, like, EastEnders or Emmerdale that can maybe help Noel?
Maybe Kate Oakes.
Kate Oakes? Who is Kate Oakes?
I think she's a lady in charge at EastEnders now.
Right, have you got Kate
Oakes? Got her
Oakes
email?
Yeah. What's her number, Alan?
I don't know her
Well,
number.
You're a fat lot of good you are, mate. Sorry, no. I thought we had a sniff of a gig there. Thought it was we were going to get you a job, get you back on the telly. Now you've been back on the telly, you were saying. Welcome to my world. This is our flipping job,
oh
mate.
Oh my
how
god!
How dare you laugh?
What a
this
job
is
you've
how
got.
We feed our kids.
I'm just jealous.
By the way, you're welcome anytime you want.
Thank
I love you,
mate.
I've always
you
been
so
a big
much.
Fan of yours. Oh, I knew we'd get
likewise,
on.
Likewise, mate. I loved Not the 9 o'clock News when I was.
Well, that's good because I wasn't on it, mate. I was on the 11 o'clock show.
Oh, kicked it.
You hear that, Suzanne? You hear that, Suzanne? We tried to get you, Suzanne. No. We got blocked, so we went. Well, let's go for second best. But Danny said no. So we got Noel instead. You hear that, Suzanne?
Oh, my God, the shame of it all.
Yeah, the shame
that's
of
like,
it.
That's why like when don't people worry. Say, liberty, yeah.
Don't worry. But you are acting. You're just telling us
yes.
that you're in a big TV show.
I am,
but are you allowed to talk about
I don't
it,
know. Right? But I've already we talked about it now anyway. I've like whilst
the
I was
TV
shooting
show,
it,
you
we
can.
Were yeah, we yeah. were yeah. Okay, so it's a new Russell T Davies drama. Oh, on BBC One.
That's the Doctor Who man, right?
Yes, and the Queer as Folk man.
Oh,
yes,
right.
So he's written a new drama which is amazing. And
is it gay people traveling through time?
No, but there are gay people in it.
Okay,
gay people traveling through time is the other one with John Barrowman.
Oh yeah, that's it. Yeah,
Torchwood.
Torchwood. That's it. Yeah.
I actually really like that.
Touchwood, I think.
Very good. all kinds of stuff happens in that
yeah,
TARDIS.
Yes.
So basically...
A TARDIS with a glory hole, imagine. I don't think you can say glory hole on British radio. Let's move on, Noel. You've lowered the tone. I wish we'd got you, Suzanne. I really do.
I'll start writing the email now.
Yes.
I hope she hasn't messaged. Maybe she's not listening.
She's listening to Talk Sport.
Yeah. I mean, yeah.
Wait,
well, she knows a lot about Chelsea. I mean, this is incredible. Go on, try.
Yeah, so back to the... What was I talking about?
Russell T Davies.
Great. Thank you. Russell T Davies. Yeah, so it's called Years and Years. I think it's coming out in May sometime, but it's about a family in Manchester, and it's set like in the not too distant future.
Okay.
when a kind of geopolitics has gone kind of right wing and
wow.
a bit nuts. And
what do you mean gone? We're there.
Yeah, yeah. Well,
so
yeah.
I voted Brexit.
Okay, but even more so. Okay,
gosh,
it's like what's going to happen in 20 years' time.
Yeah,
and there's some really it's really interesting. Technology is a bit crazy in it, and it's a bit kind of dystopian, you know, in its way. But I just feature a few scenes in the first episode.
But is this your first TV acting?
No,
thing?
I've done others. I did another BBC drama about 2 years ago called Ordinary Lies.
Which was
the second series of Ordinary Lies, where I played a forklift truck driver lad.
Okay. What?
Yeah. Wow. I had to learn how to do it.
Can you do it?
Yeah. Basically, if this what, all goes tits out, yeah, I can go and get a job in Costco.
Skills. Transferable skills is what it's all about.
I've got it all going on. Yeah, we're going to find some clips of that. So I've done a couple of good TV, you know.
Yeah.
Some quality stuff, which is, it's hard, isn't it? Because those gigs are so few and far between. But if I keep just kind of cracking on
and
with
what's
those.
This? You're one of the 12 Irish tenors, I believe.
I was. Is
that correct? I was.
How many of the 12 Irish tenors were actually from Ireland?
None. None. The majority were Australian. And there's an amazing clip. I'll see if I can find it. It's on one of my friends'
Facebook.
Did you
have to sing with an Irish accent?
Yeah.
Go on,
Irish eyes are smiling, all the world looks bright and gay.
Yeah,
it's not an accent. I can't. It's like one of my special skills, but not now.
I think we should be continuing the rest of the conversation in this.
Well, we can if you want. That'll be fine. So basically,
I'd like that too.
Maybe not.
All right.
That was all going so well.
There we go.
There's a clip on one of my friends' Facebook. We basically went to a morning breakfast show in Nevada.
Yeah.
A news show. You know, you can imagine the type, like purple kind of. Well, a bit like this studio.
Yeah.
You can make it purple if you want.
Yeah. Oh, can you change the light colour?
Yeah. Kat doesn't know how this works though.
So
good luck.
Yeah, and also rubbish radio.
Yeah.
She's changing it now. It's.
Yeah, but then you had it. There we go.
Okay. Now I'm back in the zone. So basically, they took the 12 of us to this studio with a boombox and a CD.
Oh no!
And they were like, right, okay. So we did the first song, and then the presenter's like, "I'm the biggest fan. You know, I've been to see the show so many times. You guys are great. Go and see them at the El Dorado Casino." And then they go, "You're going to sing 'When Irish Eyes Are Smiling,'" and only eight of the 12 Irish tenors sang it in the actual show. So I went, "Oh mate, we don't know the words for this." And they were like, "Well, just sing the choruses." And I was like, "Well, what do we do for the song? Like what?" Anyway, they didn't. We had to stand there, and there's this amazing clip where the song starts and everyone starts swaying and they all start singing Hell for Leather, and it gets down to four of us on the end and we have lost it completely. Like, for the whole song, we're just like, and I'm going to the boys like, keep smiling. It's glorious.
Wow.
I'll have to send you.
Send it to us. Now, I can't quite remember how it came into my timeline, but you wrote a thing I saw it a couple of weeks ago about mental health.
It was last week.
Last week.
Yeah.
And about how you've been struggling recently, but you kind of turned a corner and things were looking better and you felt that you were on the up again.
Yeah.
How are you? I guess it's the basic thing.
Yeah, I'm good. It's always hard, I think. But the more work you do on it, I think the better it becomes, because you start to be able to feel, to understand it a little bit more. For years, there was just constant noise in my head, and it wasn't always good noise, and I didn't know how to turn it off. And there were loads of factors. There were loads of stuff from I had a lot of kind of traumatic events from my childhood, a lot of things that I probably should have addressed around the time that you would usually address kind of turning into adulthood, maybe at university. My sexuality being a massive one of those.
You were told to keep it quiet that you were gay.
Yeah, well, I was at a time when I didn't really know. I was still kind of, you know, I was calling myself bi, and I was 18 and, you know, and I was in Ibiza. God. You know, at that time in my life, anything.
Loving it.
Yeah, exactly.
Loving
it. I just didn't care.
Good for you.
Yeah, exactly.
At that time as well, sort of the turn, the late 90s, early 2000s, it was all about sexual experimentation. You didn't have to choose, did you, at that point?
Yeah. Also, I'd grown up in Cardiff during the 90s, where there was really not much outlet for that kind of stuff. I found my love in the darkness, in clubs and just like there was no social way of being gay apart from underground at that time for me. And so it always felt like it was always connected to like booze and drugs and, you know, and just meaningless sex and all that stuff, to kind of, because that's how it was discovered, which is not the right way for anyone to
discover
love.
Wasn't loving. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. But you don't understand that. I didn't understand that. So that's all part of like my you know, crazy head. And then you chuck hearsay on top of that, and then they tell you, I told them in the auditions that I'd, you know, I don't know what I am, but, you know, I've had these experiences, and they came to me and they were like, if you want to be in this, you don't discuss this anymore. But from a TV perspective, I can understand. It's like a multi-million pound thing that they don't know if it's gonna, you know.
Isn't that funny? You're still justifying it.
Yeah.
You're still just... I'm not criticising
you for it
at all.
No, I know it's wrong, but I can see their point. Like, that's what I'm saying. I know, yeah. Like, it damaged me, but I know why. If you're a business and you want to make sure that this thing is going to be perfect, like, I know it... Yeah, I shouldn't justify
it. I don't want to do all the work that you've done recently with your therapist, so I'm not criticising.
No, but I understand what you're saying. Yeah, I shouldn't just... It is completely wrong and it shouldn't be allowed, but I get it.
You telling them that should have been their cue to, right, okay, let's protect you.
Yeah, of course, but yeah, and it was just like, shut up. Yeah, and they tried to use it a little bit later. Oh, it's so boring. But it's I've just found that whole time a damaging time, really, because at that age where you're supposed to be exploring yourself and... You know, wearing crazy clothes and I don't know, whatever it is that you do as a teenager,
making mistakes.
Yeah, exactly. They package you up and they tell you what to wear, what to say, and who to be. And that was, for me, that was the most damaging thing ever. And I don't ever think I understood it fully for ages, because then you go into that the next step, which was the hatred from the public, and then you're dealing with all of that, and you don't have time to, and then you're just burying all of these feelings and just not enjoying yourself. So it's taken a long time. Then there's the financial worries and all of that stuff, and getting a career for yourself that you feel like you have to hold on to with both hands. And so my mental health never was at the top of my list of priorities for years and years and years. And actually, it was meeting my partner James, my husband. He's the first person really who has allowed, you know, he took the reins for me and allowed me to not have to worry about money for the first time. I kind of burnt out in musical theatre because it was so, you know, it absorbs so much of your energy. And I got to the point where I felt like I wasn't doing it justice because I wasn't happy. Mm. And I was like, I've got the best job in the world. Why don't I feel happy? I'm, you know, and... Yeah, and I know it started affecting my, you know, it was affecting our relationship and all that kind of stuff. And yeah, he has allowed me to have that breath and it all came to a head last Christmas, basically. And some guy came up to me in a pub and was like, and I wasn't ready for it. And he'd said, will you come out for a drink? And I was like, I'm not really in the mood, but I went anyway. And I felt like a superhero without my cape on, you know, I'd just been on the sofa for the afternoon. And this guy came up and went, oh, you're that guy from here. Say, what, you still doing all that singing and that? And it's so stupid. It's such a little thing, but I wasn't ready. And it was like an arrow through my armor.
Yeah.
And I know it's stupid, but I was like, I feel like I have to justify myself to you. And I got really upset and I walked out the pub. I burst into tears and I just lost my shit.
It's not stupid at all. Because what you're talking about is a drip, drip, drip over years. And that guy got you right at the moment when you were
the
rawest.
Yeah, and it broke the dam. And I rang my mum and I was just like, I can't do this anymore. Like, I don't know how to cope anymore, and I don't want to feel like this anymore. So I went to the doctor and said all of this, and then, you know, went on the waiting list for therapy and all that kind of stuff. And slowly but surely kind of built myself back up. But it's been the last year. And what's amazing about it is that I have had these beautiful creative moments because I've had this space to think. Like, I've done some nice work and I've been writing, and things that I never knew that I wanted to do, I'm exploring. And it's all part of this process.
Do you think it was a breakdown or a breakthrough?
It was a breakdown. And then I think, getting back was the breakthrough. And I was sitting on a beach in Thailand last week with my husband, having had, you know, this amazing experience of teaching and passing on my knowledge for the first time in my entire
life. How many kids were you teaching?
So we put on a Queen concert in Jakarta at the British School in Jakarta with 288 kids,
dear
12
God.
Groups. We did Don't Stop Me Now with Year 8, which I, you know, it's like a bunch of 12-year-olds who don't want to be there. But we made them, you know, then we had them dancing.
Yeah,
and,
I bet you did.
Yeah, it was great. So we'd done this I'd never done it before. My James is a choreographer and a teacher and a wonderful dancer. So it was, so he's used to doing it and also really gobby. So like I'm just used to seeing him take control of rooms. So it was nice to put myself in that position. Anyway, we got to Thailand and I was just on the beach and I was just like, in the last 18 months, I've come so far, like, and I haven't discussed it. And I think part of your healing as well is sharing it, because then you realise it's not a dirty little secret. Your sexuality is not a dirty little secret. Your crazy thoughts are not a dirty little secret. If you let them out and you share them, you realise that there are loads of people in the same space as you, the same, like, they need help too, or they don't need help, or they can help you because they've been through it, and the minute you start talking about it, the more, like, I've just found it so, so amazing. Like, the messages I've had from people who I've known for years and they go, I had no idea you were dealing with that. Well, of course not, because I'm like a joker face. I put on the smiles and everything's okay, but it's not okay. And my point was, I think it's now more than ever so important to just tell people when you're not okay, because, you know, you could just get washed away and... Yeah,
too many people are dying.
Yes.
Too many people are dying when actually they don't need to. And I don't know how close you came to it. I've certainly come very, very close to it. You know, I've looked it in the face. And we're here tonight. You're here tonight because of that post. So I'm really glad that you wrote it. So,
yeah, and thanks for reaching out. It's amazing.
Like, hey, listen, we're kind of out of time. You are doing a show April the 19th.
Yes, I am in Cardiff.
Where is that?
Okay, so it's at the Wales Millennium Centre, which is the most brilliant place in Cardiff. And I'm doing my one-man cabaret called If You Don't Know Me By Now.
I love it.
I want to see it.
I thought I'll just like set it up for the next show. I'll just do Noel puns for the whole thing. So basically it's a journey through like my musical influences and the shows that I've been in and the music I was brought up on and music that I'm a fan of. And I just talk like this, really.
Wicked. Well, I could sit and listen to you all night. If you do one anywhere near or a night that we can get to, we would both love to come.
I will let you know.
Where's the best place to get tickets? We'll follow you on Twitter or go to the Wells.
Yes, you can get tickets on the Wells Millennium website, Millennium Centre website.
And you are the Noel Sullivan on Twitter, is it?
At the Noel Sullivan on Twitter and Instagram.
Hey man, it's so nice to meet you.
Thank you.
Honestly, we're not just saying this for bullshine purposes. Anytime you want to come back, you're in town, you want to pop in for an hour, you'd be very, very welcome.
Thanks,
I've thoroughly enjoyed chatting and listening to you.
Thank you.
I think you're one of the good guys, so hang in there. We will carry on with your phone calls in a bit. 0344 499 1000. This is Talk Radio.
Experience the unconventional.
Hello.
The unpredictable.
Don't you think that's a bit weird?
And the completely unorthodox.
It was my birthday.
With rule-free Ian Lee.
I was just trying to generate a bit of content.
The late night alternative with Ian Lee.
Hate alarm clock. Hate going to work.
On Talk Radio.
If there's one thing that my family and friends know me for, it's being an amazing gift giver. I owe it all to Celebrations Passport from 1-800-Flowers.com, my one-stop shopping site that has amazing gifts for every occasion. With Celebrations Passport, I get free shipping on thousands of amazing gifts. And the more gifts I give, the more perks and rewards I earn. To learn more and take your gift giving to the next level, visit 1-800-Flowers.com/ACAST. That's 1-800-Flowers.com/ACAST.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.